Joan Didion once quipped about California, "The future always looks good in the Golden Land because no one remembers the past." That mindset was evident in both the lives and work of a dynamic group of artists who worked in Los Angeles in the 1960s. Determined to escape the shadow of the New York art scene, they rejected abstract expressionism and the weight of art history with experiments in pop, minimal, and conceptual art that reflected Southern California's bright light, smooth surfaces, and offbeat attitudes. In Rebels in Paradise, the Los Angeles art scene in the 1960s, Hunter Drohojowska-Philp provides a portrait of the complicated personal lives and artistic innovations of artists like Ed Ruscha, David Hockney, Judy Chicago, and Ed Kleinholtz. The book is published by Henry Holt, and I'm very pleased to welcome Hunter Drohojowska-Philp to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Did you have to have such a hard, difficult to pronounce middle name there?
That's what happens as one goes through life acquiring people's last names.
What kind of work was being done in Los Angeles in the mid-1950s before this whole thing happened?
The artists were pretty much indebted to the abstract expressionist style, the New York school.
Well, there was also a San Francisco school, which was a reflection of abstract expressionism as well, but different.
Absolutely. Bay Area abstraction, and they were very much indebted to that and devoted to that. But it was a big shadow, and I think eventually they felt that they could not really thrive under that shadow and had to develop their own style.
Well, Los Angeles is a big city and had some pretty good art schools. What was the problem? Is the fact that so many of the people who were working there had come from New York or San Francisco?
Well, it's just that that there wasn't an evident alternative. I mean, that really is the meaning of pop art in many ways. You know, that's the huge breaking through of the dominance of abstract expressionism. It's just such an overwhelming moment in American art history, isn't it?
Well, did people choose to move to Los Angeles as an alternative to New York or San Francisco?
Many did. Many were from there. Some of them moved from there to New York and took a look around and decided they couldn't do what they needed to do in New York. That is certainly true of Ed Ruscha, who was enthralled when he came to see Leo Castelli here, but he decided he could not thrive here.
Although he has a nice career in New York as a Los Angeles artist. You said that they were rejecting abstract expressionism, but abstract expressionism was already being rejected by New York artists by 1960.
Oh, absolutely. Jasper Johns and Robert Rauschenberg had already seen their way through that.
And we were seeing pop art from Lichtenstein, and then Andy Warhol came along.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I'm not in any way saying that this is unique to Los Angeles. I'm just saying that the artists who live there put their own spin on it, and it's a different sort of appearance to the work and a different sort of meaning, really.
Would it be easier to thrive in Los Angeles because you'd be a big fish in a little pond?
Well, that would make sense if that pond had had anything in it like an art gallery or a magazine or a museum. But the real essence of that moment in Los Angeles is how little support there was for what these artists were doing.
And why is that? The Hollywood was there, a lot of rich people, some of them highly cultured. There was the pop music scene that was burgeoning. You had the Beach Boys, the Byrds, all sorts of other groups that were bringing a lot of money to the city. It was a city of a form of American culture.
Well, they all come up together in a way. Certainly the Beach Boys and the Byrds, who are close friends with many of the artists in my book, they all sort of form a kind of parallel culture of their own at that time, a kind of cool, hip, irreverent sort of approach to making music, making art, making architecture, making fashion. I mean, my book is about the whole 60s.
Well, it's a popular culture.
That's correct.
And and you say pop art thrived in Los Angeles.
Well, the style of pop art was actually accepted to a certain degree fairly easily by the populace of Los Angeles. But again, it wasn't unique there. I mean, certainly it was accepted quickly in New York. I just think it was the moment of change.
And you say that two of the most important shows in L.A. were from artists from outside the West Coast, artists that had lived mostly in New York, Andy Warhol and Marcel Duchamp.
Yes, well, I think most people don't know that Andy Warhol's first show was in Los Angeles. And his second big show was also in Los Angeles, and that was those were the huge paintings of Elvis. And then followed right by the first ever retrospective of Marcel Duchamp.
Now, Duchamp, of course, is one of the key figures in 20th century art. If any artist has had a lasting impact, it's not been Picasso or Matisse. Surprisingly, it's been Marcel Duchamp. So I'm not surprised by that. But how did Warhol, who was stationed here in New York, wind up having his first two shows in Los Angeles?
Well, the art dealer Irving Blum, who had Ferris Gallery, and his partner at the time, Walter Hopps, went with Dennis Hopper to New York, and they went to a number of different studios. And at first they weren't sure. And then after a moment, Irving thought, no, this is going to be great. And he invited Andy to have his first show. And Andy, who'd been taking his work around all the New York galleries with very little success, said, sure, why not? And he showed all the Campbell soup can paintings, which, by the way, are going to be brought to L.A. for a big show at the Museum of Contemporary Art this fall. So they're all returning to L.A. after being at the Museum of Modern Art for the last 15 years.
And you would have thought that Andy Warhol, who was so fascinated with celebrity, would have chosen to move to L.A. after that.
Well, and if you read what he said about L.A. at the time, he clearly talked about how much he loved L.A., how he loved the plastic quality and the white-on-white and the sort of ease of life there. But he was a very canny businessman, and he knew the business of art is in New York.
And one of his friends, Basquiat, left New York to escape the New York scene, moved to L.A., and then couldn't survive in L.A. and came back to New York before he died.
Well, much, much later.
Yeah. But it seems to me to be part of the same sensibility, because there's another artist who reflects a different kind of pop sensibility the next generation.
Well, I think it's really what I love about this period that I describe in my book, Rebels in Paradise. The reason it's called Rebels in Paradise in a way is because they chose these artists all who are now fairly internationally known, and you've mentioned them, but you know, Robert Irwin or David Hockney or whomever, they choose to come to L.A. to make a statement at a time when there was no art museum showing. There was no unique art museum. The only art museum available to them was the Museum of Natural History, Science, and Art.
But Robert Irwin represents a different sensibility connected to Los Angeles, as artists interested in the light.
Very much so. What's come to be called light and space, along with Larry Bell or Craig Kaufman or James Turrell, Doug Wheeler. I mean, that is certainly a huge and strong aspect of the art that develops in the 60s.
It is interesting. I mean, we have light and space everywhere in the world, and yet somebody like Robert Irwin chose to do it there rather than in New York or San Francisco or Chicago or any of a number of other cities.
That's true. Well, I do think that the light in Los Angeles is extraordinarily special, and that is why the movie studios went there in the first place. I mean, it is pearlescent and it is long-lasting and so forth. However, the point has been made that a lot of the light and space art is not made necessarily with just a view to the outdoors. It's made inside in a studio.
You mentioned the Ferris Gallery. Was that the first major gallery in Los Angeles?
It's the first contemporary gallery, and I make that point because these were artists who really were trying to break the mold and do something new.
The first time I visited Los Angeles, I was struck by it as a form of pop art in itself. I actually thought Dadaist, because there was the Brown Derby, a restaurant that was shaped like a Brown Derby. There was the Capitol Records building, which shaped like a stack of 45s. There was a camera shop that looked like a camera. I would have thought that artists of a certain sensibility would have felt right at home.
Well, I think they do. I think they did, and I think they do. I think that there is Los Angeles is maybe not for everybody, but certainly for those of us who appreciate that kind of wacky pop sensibility. It has a unique charm.
And another artist that I associate with that sensibility, a New York artist, is Claus Oldenburg, but he showed in Los Angeles as well at the Dwan Gallery.
That's correct. He spent a half a year there developing some of his large-scale pop installation sculptures. And he did a performance piece there, Autobodies, very important performance piece, 1963.
He said that the work that he did there just didn't look right in New York.
That's right. Too loud, too large, too much.
Well, I guess New York snobs might say yes, too loud, too large, too much. My guest is Hunter Drahojowska-Philp. Her book, Rebels in Paradise, The Los Angeles Art Scene in the 1960s. It's published by Henry Holt. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Hunter Drahojowska-Philp, who has written a number of books about art, including the art and life of Georgia O'Keeffe. She contributes to Art News, Art and Auction, ArtNet, the Los Angeles Times. Now she's written a book called Rebels in Paradise, The Los Angeles Art Scene and the 1960s. It's published by Henry Holt. I got to go back to the surprise that Los Angeles, one of the largest cities, this third largest city in the United States, had such a paltry art scene up into the 1960s, considering all of the sophisticated people who lived there. Is it just because of the layout of the city? It's in most places where there is an art scene, there's usually an art area, and then there's an art gallery area. Is it because Los Angeles is so spread out that didn't develop?
Well, it's really, Los Angeles is a post-World War II city, and the real prosperity and population boom in Los Angeles happens after 1945. So really by 1957, when Ferris Gallery is established, that really is, it hasn't been that long.
And where was it?
It was on La Cienega Boulevard, where in fact there were a number of art galleries. I'm not saying there weren't any art galleries. There were, and some of them were very good, Felix Landau, David, and so forth. But a lot of those artists, the artists they showed, were either abstract expressionist New York school artists or a school of Paris artists or artists indebted to that. Ferris was really the site of a transformation because there were several people, many people, who really were able to dramatically change their work.
Why didn't the galleries pop up in the alternate places like Venice Beach or Santa Monica?
Well, eventually they do. But, I mean, there weren't that many even after Ferris. They just decided they would cluster on what was called Gallery Row. And on Monday nights, they'd have the art walks, and the collectors would go from gallery to gallery and have wine and look at art. And they would really be introduced to contemporary art in this way.
Why was Duchamp such an important influence on L.A. artists?
Well, certainly the sort of irreverence appealed, I think, to Ed Ruscha and to Robert Irwin, to Craig Kaufman, and other people. Dennis Hopper, who's a very big person in my book, was very taken with his irreverent attitude.
Well, he kind of resisted doing what people wanted, but the Pasadena Art Museum was able to get him to agree to his first retrospective.
Well, Walter Hopps, then curator at that museum, had a long relationship with Duchamp's work because he'd been introduced to modern art through this very perspicacious couple, the Ahrensbergs, who collected Duchamp's work in depth along with Brancusi and Man Ray and any number of modern artists. And they were close friends with Duchamp. So Walter Hopps had seen all this material in their home, and they had passed away, and their collection had gone to the Philadelphia Museum, where it is today.
The major Duchamp collection.
Yes, there. The biggest one. And in fact, it's to Los Angeles's everlasting shame that it lost the collection. However, when Duchamp met with young Walter Hopps, he was astonished by how much this man knew about his art, and he agreed to have his first retrospective in this old Chinese-style mansion. It was hardly even a museum.
What did Duchamp think of Los Angeles?
Well, he says he liked it. I think he was quite taken with it. He calls it a white spot in a dark world. I think he enjoyed visiting there. I mean, you notice he never moved there, but I think he thought it was a nice respite.
And Los Angeles artists went to the show at the Pasadena and said, aha?
Aha, indeed. They said, aha, and the opening was overrun with not only the artists who are in my book, like Joe Good and Ed Ruscha and Craig Kaufman and Billy Al Bengston and Ken Price and all these influential young artists who were there, but there was also all these European dealers and collectors, New York dealers and collectors came, and it was LA's moment of arrival.
And at a certain point, artists from other parts of the world who had a choice of where to move wound up moving to Los Angeles. We have David Hockney coming from London. Judy Chicago, I assume, came from Chicago.
Correct.
There were a bunch of artists, was it Bill Knotts or something like that, who also were coming from, the whole bunch of Chicago artists wound up going to L.A. and not staying in Los Angeles.
Well, Los Angeles even today is extraordinary for its the availability of relatively inexpensive studio space and a kind of laissez-faire attitude about how the work develops. It has become really one of the major centers of production in the world because of those factors. Whereas, you know, now how could an artist afford to live in New York? A young artist, a young up and coming, starting, you know, young
well, they
artist.
Would move to Williamsburg now. Other now it's Bushwick.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Judy Chicago hang out with a lot of the Ferris artists?
She was very much influenced by the Ferris artists at first. Her early work looks like color-coded, minimalist sculpture, really. And she was influenced by the, quote, Finnish fetish aspect of the work of Billy Al Bengston, who in turn was influenced by the surfaces of motorcycles and cars.
But you get the feeling that many of the women who you discuss in this book had little more than supporting roles in this scene. Why were the men so dismissive of female artists?
Well, that's not unique to Los Angeles. You know, I mean, women in all over the country had difficulty having exhibitions up until the 70s.
But some of the male artists were even promoted by Ferris for an exhibit as the studs.
That's right. Well, they prided themselves on their rather their activities as surfers and motorcycle racers and drivers of fast cars, and they came out of they came of age in the 40s and 50s. You know, they were not. They were in there. They'd gone to the war. They were not really sort of attuned to maybe new feminist sensibilities. And in fact, at that point, neither was Judy Chicago, whose name then was Gerowitz.
And then later, there was a women's collective that was developed in response to all of this.
Correct, in Los Angeles, the Woman's House, Woman House, and then the Woman's Building.
Was the art world any more welcoming to gay artists like David Hockney and Don Bacardi, who was Christopher Isherwood's lover?
Well, I think, according to Don Bacardi, it was very difficult, really. I don't think it was a huge issue, particularly for them, but certainly it wasn't as open-minded and liberal as it is today.
I know why David Hockney moved to Los Angeles, because he loved to paint swimming pools.
He loved the light. He talks about that. He talks about arriving in Los Angeles and saying that the city needed its Piranesi, and here he is to document the city in a way that even the people who live there, even to this day, have never necessarily captured the pools, the houses, the people in the way that he did in the 1960s.
What about politics? Were the artists in Los Angeles politicized by the events of the 60s?
Well, certainly after the Watts riots, artists were very politicized about the way in which the African-American community was treated. I mean, there was tremendous support for that community. And then subsequently, they erect the first Peace Tower built by Mark DeSouvereau, who was in Los Angeles at the time. And
another New York artist.
Who lived in L.A. at a developmental point in his life. I mean, a lot of artists did, actually, like Bruce Nauman, who's there for such a long time and is never considered an L.A. artist, but certainly developed all of his early work in Los Angeles.
Well, in New York, most of the politics was focused on the Vietnam War. In Los Angeles, it was more about race.
Well, no, after the Watts riots, I was about to say, the Peace Tower, the anti-war Peace Tower, which actually predates the art, the movement against the war in New York, where Irving Petlin and other artists, they asked for artists around the world to submit paintings. 400 paintings are submitted that are hung on this enormous tower on Sunset Boulevard. In fact, this piece was recreated at the Whitney a few years ago. And it was a real lightning rod for attention. It was covered in all the papers, and it divided the city of Los Angeles enormously, because Los Angeles then was an extremely conservative community still.
So did all of this lead galleries to include more work by women and minorities?
Eventually, yes. I mean, it might take a decade, but it certainly starts happening by the end of the 60s and into the early 70s. We definitely see a shift.
And then we see a shift away. Art Forum, which most people think of as a New York art magazine, got its start as an on the West Coast as a magazine for West Coast artists. The Ferris closed. The Dwan, which was a really important Los Angeles gallery, moved to New York around the same time.
That's right.
So what happened? Did Los Angeles suddenly become unwelcoming?
Well, Los Angeles is a hard place for art galleries to make money. It was then, and I think it still is today. I think that that's the one area where it's been hard for them. There, no matter how many galleries there are, I've heard from most dealers that it's always been hard to make a lot of money as a dealer there. So that explains the move.
But movie stars buy art. Steve Martin wound up writing a book about art and art galleries.
That's right. But as one dealer told me the other day, it's okay, but is it enough to support the overhead? But yes, there's a rather dark moment. I mean, there's all this wonderful art that comes up, and many of these artists show now with New York galleries. I mean, see Craig Kaufman and Larry Bell and Robert Irwin and James Turrell all are showing at Pace Gallery by 1967, and they're all having international careers, and everything's going very smoothly. But the dark turn comes when Ferris closes, Art Form moves, just as you say. And the 70s are really kind of a dark period of rethinking the art scene, I think, in Los Angeles. And then slowly, the galleries come back, and then the Museum of Contemporary Art is opened and so forth. And today we have, I think, what do I say in my book, 3 or 4 contemporary art museums.
And a thriving art scene?
Enormous.
Is it influenced by what happened in the 60s, or is this a whole new thing?
Well, I think the artists from the 60s show in these galleries, and so do the multiple generations of artists who come after.
Hunter Drahojowska-Philp will be reading and signing books tonight at 7 at 192 Books. That's at 192 10th Avenue at 21st Street. Because you probably can't figure out how to spell her name, I'll spell it for you. Drahojowska-Philp. Her book, Rebels in Paradise, the Los Angeles Art Scene and the 1960s, is published by Henry Holt. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.